InnataQuest with Terry Robinson, Mike Noble, and Chris Dodds.
Where's that? Well, I mean, this week is. I mean, isn't everyone supposed to die on Saturday or something like that?
Yeah.
Just waiting for Terry.
Hot button item.
Okay.
I know the Old Testament reasonably well for a non-theist. Like, I did. I try and do my homework. I try and familiarize with myself with what I don't believe in. So I try to familiarize myself with those texts. And Matthew and Mark are pretty unambiguous with the statement of no one knows when the end times will begin. And then a guy raises his hand and says, I know when the end times will begin. You know what that means? Since they say no one knows, he's a nobody. Now, damn it. That there has to be a better way to phrase that. You get what I mean, though.
Yeah. I think that was our cold intro.
What, me just screaming?
Yeah, you don't even need the explanation of what you're guying about. You just have the guying.
Yeah, I think that works.
Super.
I dropped a marker.
Dropped like 5 markers on that bitch.
He's just pounding on the PG. I just picture later as we get better at this, he has his podcaster keyboard, which is literally the P key, and it's 4 square inches, and he just like slams his fist down on it. That was like my idea, that every time an old person got internet access, they should get a keyboard with only 3 keys on it that consisted of porn, illegal music, and Wikipedia. And I think that would suffice for a while.
Is that just for old people? I think that would work for pretty much everybody.
Well, okay. How about this? Like, that is the keyboard you get until you pass the internet permit exam and you're allowed to view the entirety of the web.
I thought that was the entirety of the web. Is there other stuff?
Yeah, I'm drawing a blank too.
Damn all of you. Every time there's a pause, I just picture the burner from Back to Work playing.
I just drop a marker during the nose.
Dropping mad markers.
I just can't wait for like the sound of the you're hitting your keyboard button too much to go off, and that way we know that we've been silent for too long. We just hear the.
Well, I have to drop a marker to know to take that sound out.
Click.
Oh, okay, that's an anti-marker.
Click. Yeah. Click. Click. Yeah. Click. Click.
So, are we the Inadequasters or this week in personal inadequacy?
I don't know. I really like the Inadequasters.
I'm fine with an AdaQuest or two. The other one that came to mind was You're Doing It Wrong Weekly.
I think if we're the AdaQuesters, though, like our mascot could be like Daffy Duck or something.
Oh, my God. It's totally Tall Duck, too.
See, I can't get the stupid guitar joke out of my head. Like, oh, look, it's a Fender and AdaCaster. But we're doing the Q, so I guess it would be a duck.
Could it be like a Stratocaster with like a duck for the head of it?
That kind of reminds me of the Venn diagram that is a beaver playing a guitar overlapping with a duck playing a piano, and it is a duckbill platypus playing a keytar.
Sweet.
That so has to be our little icon, a duckbill platypus playing the keytar. See, that's when you know we've made it. When people can buy a plush duckbill platypus playing a keytar.
I like it.
Our topic for this week is distraction. The culture of distraction seems to be something that is popping up more and more on the social radar of American intelligentsia. I, for one, think it is utter and total horse hockey. But before we get into that in detail, let's have a little bit of a base to start from. Distraction is merely dividing attention, usually by the lack of ability to pay attention, the lack and interest of the object of attention, or finding greater interest or novelty in doing something else. The major type of distraction that we're going to talk about is merely doing the wrong thing at the wrong time when you have an important task that needs to be done, and that quite simply isn't the thing that you're doing. Chris, you have an example of this from your life?
Yeah, I think it comes in a lot of forms too. I think there's stuff that you do that might not be, you might think you're making progress on something by doing it, and you're really not, because you're focusing on stuff that really doesn't align with your goals, which is, that's a whole different conversation. But I think it does tie in a little bit. But I mean, thinking back, I can look at times where, say, you know, I've worked on certifications or I've worked on, you know, studying up on some technical product. And, you know, at the time it was like, you know, just what was in front of me. And like, this seems like the next step that I need to do. This seems like the next thing I need to focus on to get where I want to go. And I didn't really spend the time to go out and look at all the other things that were out there. I didn't really sit down and think, what, you know, what do I really need to do to go focus on to get where I want to go? And so I got distracted by what I saw as being, you know, kind of the easy path in front of me versus some of the other tasks that might have gotten me a little bit closer to where I wanted to be.
That's interesting. That seems to be like a metal level of distraction that most people probably wouldn't pick up on, where the realization was that you were doing what you thought was an important task, but the error was not in the accomplishment of that task, but in realizing that maybe it didn't actually play into your long-term goal.
Sure. Yeah. And I think that's a thing I think a lot of people struggle with, is really defining your goals. You know, like what is my goal? Because if you don't have that settled, I mean, you can get off the path pretty quickly. That's distraction. You're getting off the path from where you want to be.
So you would define distraction in a much broader term, I'd say, than most productivity gurus would.
Yeah, I think when you get down to it, I mean, there's all the, like, you know, you need a distraction free, you know, workspace, and you need all these little things to make it work for you. And I think at the end of the day, for me, most of that stuff's crap. It's, do you really want it or not? And, you know, past that too, you know, you've got to do some work in defining what that is. You know, what do you want? But all the other stuff is really just, I think the other stuff is distraction. I think the other stuff that you're like, I need a distraction free workplace, or I need you know, to do this certain thing to get where I want to be, even though that doesn't really get me where I want to be. That's distraction.
Well, Mike, you're at a different stage in your life. Chris has already started his professional career. I'd say that Mike has a slightly more laid out path for himself in school and such. What kind of distractions do you find yourself running into? Is there a class of distractions that you find yourself encountering, Mike?
Most of the time it's distractions that are basically with such a strong goal of getting a degree in my future. Most of the distractions are opportunities where I'm doing something that's not going towards my degree, whether it be I go off and see friends rather than do the homework. And it's not detrimental as it may be. Like, I could see situations where if I kept doing it, distracting myself with the same kind of stuff, it could be detrimental, but it's something that I should be doing my homework just to have it done, and then end up going out with friends because the opportunity arises.
Now, do you find yourself getting into cases where there are tasks that you should complete that you can't? It seems like in your case, your grades are pretty well. You're a sharp fellow, and you merely do things in what you would consider to be a suboptimum order. Is it ever a case where distraction leads you to lose something?
In my academic career, I really haven't come across any portion of time where I've flat out like missed out on something because I got distracted by something else. I think it's more of a crunch time kind of thing where I get distracted with something and the time that I can allot to the more important thing ends up becoming smaller and smaller. And there may be a quality degradation, but overall the task still gets done, just not in the most optimum way.
Now, do you guys experience stress from distraction, from the realization that you're doing the wrong thing? To me, that's the crippling part. I think I fit into the same boat as Mike. I generally get what I need to have done eventually, but I tend not to enjoy the enjoyable thing I'm doing to distract myself because I realize I'm doing the wrong task at that time.
Sorry about that.
Not a problem. It sounds like you just had a positive interaction with your spouse.
I did. She brought me a hot dog and some grapes.
If I recall, those are the traditional foods of podcasting. The hot dog represents the creation of our sausage forebears who combined the unedible into something sweet that could be consumed on a car ride. And grapes representing the victory wine when we all drink ourselves into a stupor after we listen to our own product.
I like it. I think that's it. I think you should call, who is it that makes the kosher hot dogs? Crab.
Hebrew Nation?
Yeah, Hebrew Nation.
Hebrew Nation. Yeah. Way to go.
Close enough.
A Jewish rap group. Now, is there a drink that goes with that? Like, what is the stereotypical podcaster's beverage? Did she serve you a glass of tears?
No. How do you collect that many tears?
How do you collect that many tears? Determination, sir.
Lots of crying children.
Yeah, whenever people ask me where I get my tears, I always remind them that they're fresh squeezed. Speaking of distractions.
Whee!
Now that we've made that bad joke. So the question on the table was, do you ever experience stress at the notion of doing the wrong thing at the wrong time? Or is it just a case of sudden realization and then you quote-unquote get back on track?
I don't think – I mean, for me, it's usually not as easy as just like immediately getting on back on track. I mean, there's some times when that occurs, and yeah, I would like that to be the case. That normally just be like, okay, I know what to do now. I'm going to go do that. Yeah, it does cause me a lot of stress when, you know, and like it goes back to that goal piece of it. What's, you know, what are your goals, and how do you get off track there? And so I think the stressful part for me is when that realization does occur. When it's like, oh my God, I've been spending so much of my time and attention on this stuff that I really don't care about and really doesn't get me to where I want to be.
Like podcasting.
Yeah. No, podcasting is good. I think it leads somewhere. I'm just not sure where it goes. We'll see. But, you know, that, when you have that realization that, like, you know, crap, I've been wasting my time. That's pretty stressful, and that's a hard place, I think, for a lot of people to get out of. They just kind of at that point go, I give up, and then they just to go do other things.
See, I run into distractions becoming entrenched because of the sunk cost fallacy. I don't like the notion that my time was wasted, so I think some distractions have turned into embedded life decisions. I originally picked up Magic the Gathering because my brother played it, and I kept playing until I was better than my brother, and then he quit playing. But at that point, I had already amassed a pretty sizable collection, so I did what any reasonable person would do. I kept playing for another 14 years. Do either of you have, like, embedded distractions, as I will call them, cases where you weren't doing something that you should have been doing and you wound up running with that for fear of having wasted time? This is where I am met with eerie silence, and I have my personal moment of inadequacy for the show.
Well, I know for myself that you know, IT in some ways, in general, is that for me. There's a lot that I really like about being in the IT field, but there's a lot of it that I've felt like, well, I've just kind of done it because that was the thing to do. And it was the thing that was right in front of me, and it was the thing that was the next step that had clear next steps to it. And so that's a little bit different than, you know, like Magic, but I've made bad career choices. But you know, I think it's the same thing. I think a lot of people see that in their careers, so they kind of just go down the path of this is what I know to do, and it might not necessarily be what they want to do, and it really distracts them from what they want to do.
Any thoughts on this, Mike?
I actually have a very similar to what you were saying, how Magic has been something that started out as a hobby with a sibling and just snowballed into having it be basically a gigantic part of my life. And I kind of wish that I hadn't distracted myself from – I don't want to use the term a normal life, but or a normal, say, like college life, but – it's something where I feel like I've sunk so much time into it that I distract myself from doing maybe like going out to see movies with other friends. Mainly the time I spent, I end up distracting myself from the time that I could spend with people that don't share my hobby. That's the biggest thing that not so much upsets me, but that I wish I could change.
So we've gone over what I would call large distractions, whole life scale distractions, suddenly realizing that you've picked a crappy career and that's distracted you from what you consider to be more important, or picking up hobbies that were not necessarily something you enjoy, but more or less something you had already sunk time into. There seems to be an entire industry geared around what I will call more proximate distractions, the tiny things that prevent us from getting what we want to have done accomplished. And in doing some background for the show, I was amazed in how little research there was into the efficacy of reducing distractions to increase actual productivity. Chris, you seem like a pretty focused guy. Do you have any, your common set of distractions throughout the workday that seem to throw you off your game?
I have the general stuff, like, you know, I got on Facebook and, you know, found people. Less that than other things. I'm not nearly that social, but a lot of, you know, web surfing, things like that. I'm like, oh, I could go surf Wikipedia all day and learn stuff instead of sitting here making sure people can log into their email accounts, and that's boring. But sure, there's stuff like that. I think the there not being a lot of research on distraction is kind of a byproduct of. I personally don't think that's a big problem. I don't think it's a real problem. The industry that surrounds it is an industry that's kind of built up around let's provide people with a distraction to their distraction that they have.
Yes. I ran into what I consider to be a spectacular example of that. There was a firm called Obtract that created a utility that would space out distraction rewards. So you would tell it that you were doing work, or it would monitor work that you were doing and prevent you from doing quote unquote other things. And after, say, 50 minutes, it would give you a 5 or 10 minute break to do other stuff. Am I the only one who thinks that that is utterly ridiculous?
I think they should send somebody out and like poke you with a stick when you're not doing something. I think that would be more effective.
Way more. I know I've done jobs where it was a wage job as opposed to a salary job, and clock watching became a non-trivial portion of my day, because at that point, every moment you are not working, you're experiencing a tiny victory against the man. Like, that hour has elapsed. You will get paid for that hour. So the more nothing you can do, the more you are winning as a person. And as I've transferred to salary position, that has been a terrible habit to break. The only distraction-free cases I've found is in cases where I can reduce the number of people with which I interact. Simple things like closing the door to my office during particular hours of the day, or avoiding Facebook and other instant messaging clients. Mike, studying can't be terribly interesting. Have you picked up anything regarding that?
Yeah, I usually just don't study. I find myself it's true.
Take that, man.
I would really need like a Viking.
You learned your facts.
I would really need just like a Viking style whipping master to get me to study. But I find it's one of those things where there's a lot to do with where I'm trying to study that allows me to study or not. I find that the best time to study is basically right before the time that I need the information, aka right before the relevant test. I will arrive at the classroom about an hour early, and I will not only look over the material, but I will see other students as they walk in, and I will go out of my way to ask students, like, hey, is there anything that you are having trouble with? Like, yeah, how do you do this? And my way of studying, especially this semester, it turned into answering other people's questions and reabsorbing the information because of that. But in terms of trying to study at home, the comfort of home made it nigh impossible to get anything done in that regard.
I picture you then being like, what can I do to get this accomplished? Where are there riots going on? So say, topping into your car and driving there. Or Mike, like, reviewing flashcards in a strip club or possibly at a firing range or something. Where the hell's Mike studying? Where? At the shitty titty. Oh. He's bringing out his A game on that one. Yeah. So we've come to the conclusion that the notion of we all seem to agree that the idea of a distraction-free environment is largely malarkey. I find it a concern in that there seems to be this other intellectual narrative in the United States that says that distraction is going to destroy the fabric of society. As a general rule, I find that anyone who says that anything is going to destroy anything else and it doesn't physically attack it, like you can say that a hand grenade will destroy a pig carcass or that a bomb will destroy a building, but I don't think you can say that distraction will destroy a culture. Is it just me or is it the case that we have come upon an age where we have multiple data streams and it is problematic now, but we just haven't figured out the cultural tools of sorting those out correctly so that we can still maximize time that we spend valuably? Does that make sense? Is it the case that we could just be in this weird intermezzo where the amount of data incoming is much greater than our ability to filter it out yet, and we just need to wait for ourselves to come up with those tools and everything will basically go back to the way it was? Like, what's your thought, Chris, on the notion of the culture of distraction?
Well, I mean, what you just mentioned there, I think the the filtering aspect is pretty interesting to me. The I don't think that we'll ever, I mean, in the near term, we'll just get, magnificently better at, taking in vast amounts of information. I do think there is a shift and a necessary shift with the information that we have to become more of, I think you've termed it before as a librarian versus a scholar. And being able to actually deal with information and I guess the skill set there is context, maybe. That seems to be more helpful, I think, in the short term than just being like, okay, I can handle all this information coming in and I can filter it as necessary and put it in its right place with everything that's coming in. I think there's a certain degree you do have to filter. But knowing where to look, knowing where to what that information means that's coming in that you need to focus on, that seems more important to me.
Do you think that's a generational thing, or is that something that everyone can pick up? Is it the case that we are going to inevitably be left behind by what our children come up with as a way of dealing with those information feeds? Or do you think that's something that a person can pick up over their lifetime? Mike, you have any idea on that?
I think that every generation has something that distracts it. For example, I'm sure many generations ago when cars were still something new, yeah, it's not an informational distraction. It's a physical distraction. But having a car drive by and hearing the motor go by was something that was a unique experience, and therefore it was something that people would get like, what's that noise? Oh, it's a car going by. I remember reading somewhere about when they had the first airplanes and people, when they heard an airplane overhead, it was literally something that they would look up in the sky and just stare at for multiple minutes because it was so new and so interesting because of its newness.
Some of us still do that, Mr. Noble.
I know, but it's not something I understand that you look up in the sky and airplane all the time, but it's something where each generation, I guess, creates its new distractions. And yeah, I guess the following generations are given the ability to maybe not be distracted by them anymore. But I'm sure there's still people that will get distracted by a steam locomotive just as much as the generation that we will give birth to will get some of them will still get distracted by the internet, whereas some will learn to filter it out and just maybe find something new to be distracted by. What that is, I don't know at this point, because
so you think it's mostly a generational thing that every generation has its ooh shiny that cripples it while that is happening, and it is just the case of, for instance, Generation X not being able to come to terms with the distraction, which is merely a wall of information and that can be provided by the web.
Pretty much, yeah.
Okay. Well, I think that kind of covers our topic. I want to segue into our next section. This week in crippling awkwardness, Mike and I were having a bit of a back and forth about bathroom etiquette in the workplace, And I had a coworker that came to the conclusion that anyone who spent more time on the John than him had something wrong with their bowels, and anyone who spent less time on the John than himself wasn't, what was the phrase he used, appreciating the experience. What? Because the thing I run into is I have a lot of older people where I work, and I feel bad when I go into the bathroom. I have to do a number one, and it doesn't take me more than 45 seconds to urinate, and I'm lapping these guys, and I feel that I can hear them whimper as I go away as they are squeezing drop after drop past their prostates.
Do you think that might be have something to do with the fact that you literally work for a company that is interested in the act of passing waste?
I don't think so, because I think our people, the people for which we make products, would give a lot to have that experience back. Sometimes I yell at kids at summer camp who don't seem to figure out how a trench latrine works. That pooping is a privilege, not a right. They kind of give me a funny glance as I yell at them and pull out my old grandpa cane.
One thing I've noticed at my job that I've only ever seen probably at airports, like, and especially big airports, is people talking on their cell phone in the bathroom, which I just think is bizarre. And then not only the, you know, I'm in here, pick up a call, you know, while I'm in here, maybe it's an emergency or something. There are people that will walk in the door on the phone and proceed to spend, you know, 20 minutes in there and then come out and they're still on the phone.
That's impressive. Like, yeah. Are they using a hands-free device, or is there some sort of
– they're on their cell phones.
Passing back and forth. Like, there are operations in the bathroom that, for me, take two hands. Like, how are they doing that? Just like the cheek press?
Yeah. Seems to be. Huh, I'm not in the stall with them, so I don't know. But
Hidden cameras investigate.
Maybe it's just an art that they learn over time, just how to hold a
there and just having a sign under it that says "For science, ignore." Sorry, Mike, what was that?
No, I'm figuring if, like, I would say you're lucky that you don't have any self-righteous businessmen at your place of work, and that it's a unique experience to see these constant cell phone talkers at the airport. But I guess I'd say it's an acquired skill to be able to navigate the bathroom while only using one hand, as much as it is an acquired skill of someone that only has one hand.
But the key question is that person a dickweed, Mike?
I'm pretty sure they're a dickweed, but I don't understand how they just don't have a Bluetooth headset. Like, that baffles me. If they're self-righteous, I mean, they love when people see them being important. Why wouldn't talking at what looks like the air? Oh wait, I'm looking at them from the wrong angle. They have something on their head. I just distracted myself halfway through that sentence.
Does anyone have a workplace where people feel comfortable striking up conversations while they're on the toilet?
Does a bar count as a workplace?
I don't think so, because this may just be a skill I don't have. It seems like everyone at work can identify everyone else by their shoes. Either that, by pheromone, it is not uncommon for people to just be like, "Hey, Terry," like, how the hell did they know? And they're never wrong. They never miss. Like, sometimes I'll just play this game with myself where I'll be like, "Yeah, maybe I can figure out who it is." And then I am completely wrong. Where if I had ventured forth with that, I would have been fired out of a cannon into the sun.
I think it's bizarre to, like, talk to people in the stall. Like, that seems weird to me. Like,
the weird ones are the urinal to stall conversations. Like, yes. How do they know? maybe there's a notification bar above the door that I've just been missing, but I just don't understand.
Maybe they notice you were gone from your office or something as simple as that.
Did you check in on Foursquare? Are you mayor of the of the last stall?
I'm mayor of the second stall. I think I already talked about the ongoing renovations of the bathrooms at work. That's been fun because they've now done the main bathroom, and people are now being forced to use strange new bathrooms whose rituals they may not be familiar with. Like, oh, this door doesn't close correctly, which has been interesting. I find it funny that within a given building, you will have different bathroom culture based on the bathroom to which you are going. But Chris, you work in like coal country. How does that, like, are there separate things? I picture someone bringing a canary into the bathroom as a way of checking. Does that actually happen? Or
no, not so much. I'm in the office that's kind of in town though, so it's a little bit different crowd. But you know, out in the field, it's all port-a-johns. So those are interesting. They're not interesting. I mean, frightening. But those are, you probably do want a canary in.
There was a camping trip when I was a scout that one of the mothers decided to go on because she found out that there was a port-a-john there and she thought she could make use of it as opposed to the normal latrines that you would get in a campsite. She said she was impressed with the experience about how clean it was and the fact that there was a shelf that she could put her purse on. I really don't think that was a purse shelf if you think about things that are approximately arm height within a public urinal. So that proved to be a learning experience. Chris, you strike me as someone who has a cavalier attitude towards the operations of normal humans. Do you have a moment of awkwardness from this week?
I'm cavalier. What makes you think that? First, let's ask that question.
I just think you kind of stroll through life with this attitude that like these mortals will not be ready the day the revolution comes. That you just have this mindfulness about you, that you understand what's going on in the world around you, and that it would take a Moriarty level intellect to catch you off your game. Like, I never picture you accidentally walking around work for a day and realizing that your fly was down. Like, for whatever reason, you would develop the power of telekinesis so you wouldn't have to go through the indignity of rectifying that in the workplace.
Oh, God, that happened to me on Monday. I walked into the diner and my fly was down. And I was – the worst was someone was sitting –
How down was it?
It was all the way down. But it was folded over that you couldn't really tell, a.k.a. I couldn't really tell. But there was a situation where I was standing up at the table and one of my friends was sitting down at the table and the height of her head was exactly where my crotch was. So she was able to see. And then I tried playing it off as a joke. And like, oh, why were you looking? But it's never a joke. It's just embarrassing.
Having your fly down is not a victimless crime.
Exactly.
So Terry either thinks I'm just like, you know, this arrogant jerk, or that I'm just focused on being rot, which is the same thing. But
I figure you as someone who always kind of brings out their A game. Like, every time I've interacted with you, we were driving back from Chicago and everyone in the car is falling asleep. We're like, Chris, can you drive? And you're like, yes. And on sunglasses and a soundtrack appeared in the background. At some point, Mike woke up and we were listening to Tron and you just had your A game. You were focused until you got home to your house and then probably just collapsed and started crying in the field. Like, you strike me as someone I want to strive for. Like, today I will cease the following habit. I will no longer breathe with my left lung. The right one must independence. And that is something I strive for as a person.
Well, I love that I project that, because that is so not who I am.
Now I have this image in my head of you going into your office, closing the door and being like, haha, today the 9x9x9 Rubik's Cube will be mine. Damn it! And you're just breaking apart and reassembling it. You're like, I have triumphed over my latest task. Or alternatively, having the ability to just like stare at a server and change IMAP configurations or something.
I can do that. I just turn it off.
Wizard! IMAP server down. Victory!
Well, to your original question, I think the only thing I think of this week is, and actually it does line up with kind of what you're saying. I don't think it would. I think it would have been awkward for a lot of people, and for me, it would just wound up being like, yeah. But we have a cleaning lady at work, and we actually have two cleaning services now. We have an roughly 80-year-old lady who has been cleaning the office forever and does a horrible, horrible job. Not because she's 80, just because she's a lazy 80-year-old. Which I have.
What has she ever done for the world?
Nothing, I think. And because she's always hateful, so that just lends itself to me having a poor opinion of her. But they finally hired another cleaning company.
For spite for the rest of humanity.
Yeah, yeah.
I will show you loathing.
But they finally hired another cleaning company who's actually come in and been doing a pretty good job. But they didn't fire the other lady. Because our CFO couldn't bear the thought of firing an 80-year-old, apparently. So she's still up there, and she still makes her rounds, and she came to my office the other day, and when she was in there, she said, "I really wish they would give me my job back." I said, well, what are you doing right now? She said, "Well, I'm cleaning the windows." I said, "Okay, well, what would you like about your old job?" She's like, "Well, I got to take out the trash too, and that made me look a lot busier."
Didn't make her a lot busier, just made her look a lot busier.
Yeah, I said, yes, it did. And then that was the only thing I said to her for the rest of the day. But, yeah.
I just picture you looking her straight in the eye and being like, "You're old and useless. When you die, no one will cry." And then you going back to your computer.
I really wanted to. That's what I said with my eyes. I may not have verbalized it, but.
The heart says, "I love you," but the eyes say, "You'll be crushed under the iron heel of progress."
I purposely, like, if they actually go ahead and let her take out trash again, I want to pack like the heaviest trash bags ever. And like just throw like computer
time for me to throw out my brick collection.
Yeah. Yeah. And that way maybe she'll like break her hip and fall down the stairs and then I won't have to see her again.
See, there's the emotionless Chris that we were striving for.
That's what we're looking for. That's how you bring out your day game. We have a very determined cleaning fellow at work who pretty well puts all of us to shame in the amount of work he accomplishes in a day. But he will literally not let me walk past him. Or if I do, he will stand motionless until I give him a thumbs up. I did this once for him. I don't know what did it. Like, him and I speak in crappy Spanish and crappy English, respectively. And he asked me how I was doing. And I couldn't think of the Spanish way of saying, if I had the option, I would gargle hot tar. I didn't know the Spanish word for gargle or tar. So I just gave him a thumbs up and kind of did a funny mouth like, "Hey." And now he started doing that like genuinely. So whenever he sees me, he gives me this awkward thumbs up, weird smile combo. And he won't resume what he was doing until I reciprocate it back to him.
Maybe you're secretly being filmed for like a Spanish variety show. Have you
thought
about that?
I would be fine with that. I tend to run my life as if at any moment someone could burst out and say, "Hi, you're in candid camera." Now, does that reference work anymore?
I don't think that show exists.
People still know that it did exist, though.
It's poor.
Now, is that better or worse than a fist pump or a fist bump, rather?
Oh dear! I would be terrified if people caught me fist bumping the housekeeping fellow at work. I have a unnatural fear of people thinking I am giving a genuine fist bump. Like, I tend to do things like that ironically. In chat, I will often use asterisk bro fist asterisk. I will also do the internet high five, where one places one's hand on the monitor. I do that one sometimes, but the bro fist, there is no scenario under which I could genuinely see myself doing one, except for ironic purposes, and I'm terrified that people will misinterpret that and think I'm genuine. I would probably quit my job to avoid having to repeatedly bro fist a member of housekeeping. Yeah.
It could be worse then.
You should just hit them instead.
That is generally frowned upon. There is a strict policy in my workplace about breaking equipment.
Oh.
Terrible joke met with terrible silence. Woo! The other awkwardness I encountered was we have a new food service checkout person. I'm not quite sure what to call her. I'd call her a cashier if she did anything. But she replaced our old cashier who didn't do anything. But our old cashier who didn't do anything had a very nice smile and very nice perfume and listened to what sounded like interesting Spanish music. This replacement generic Hispanic woman instead listens to salsa for most of the day. Pardon me, not salsa. American Top 40 radio. And I'm like, really? This is what you're getting from us? And I feel bad for like my people that the culture that cracked the human genome, this is what people are actually encountering from us. And at the same time, when I find myself enjoying like salsa or reggae music, I feel like I need a hall pass or something from a foreign ethnicity to like borrow their culture for a day.
Maybe that, I think that speaks volumes though. I think it's a good thing in some ways, because it's kind of like the idiot savant. It's like, look what you did in spite of your challenges.
Who are you calling the idiot savant? American culture?
Yes.
I can get behind that. I'm just baffled.
Despite the fact that you have produced Katy Perry, you have also put a man on the moon, although there is a 42-year gap between those events.
I'm just surprised
we kind of stumbled through both of them.
I'm kind of surprised that you confused salsa with top 40 radio there.
I am very tired. I have had a weird set of sleep for the week. So I was surprised I didn't start this podcast by yelling like "take lock" or some other nonsensical combination of words.
Oh.
Like I'm thinking of getting onto my treadmill after this, but I'm afraid my feet will do the wrong motion and I'll wind up doing a doggy paddle and I'll just get crushed against my bed or something. That is the degree to which I am fatigued. So you want to wrap this shit up?
Yep. Sounds
sure.
Sounds good to me.
Okay. So Chris, what have you written on lately?
Nothing.
Mike, what have you written on lately?
I have written on a piece of paper making a list for a packing list for my trip to the Caribbean. I could share it with the internet, but it's really not that interesting.
You're not taking weed to the Caribbean because you know you can get that there, right?
Yeah, there's nothing like that going with me. I'm bringing toothpaste, though. I don't know if they have that in the Caribbean.
Nope, no toothpaste.
Okay, good.
There's a very hot tariff on it there. Okay. Are you going to like the British part of the Caribbean?
I have no clue. Oh, but so Terry, have you been writing anything?
I, for the first time, updated logicwarrior.net because I was very mad at 4 a.m. at Reader's Digest.
There is refined.
So it was like, "Dear Reader's Digest, I hate you."
Oh, no, it was nothing so direct. But like, I am a large man. I'm slowly becoming a less large man. And one of the tools I've used is, I wouldn't quite directly call it calorie counting, but calorie approximation and just recording what foods I eat. So I realize, no, Terry, you literally just had lunch an hour and a half ago. You don't need to consume an entire pie. And little reminders like that I found are helpful to curb me eating for the sake of me killing time. And Paul Thurrott on Windows Weekly and a blog I stumbled upon called Primal Toad, as well as Reader's Digest, all had articles that essentially or content that espoused the idea that calorie counting is stupid because to accurately predict one's weight over long periods of time, one would have to count calories with an accuracy that is simply impossible. For instance, an additional Ritz cracker a day for a year would result in one gaining a pound. And over decades, this could lead to a significant deviation in weight, so one shouldn't calorie count. And I consider this to be utterly ridiculous. To me, that is the analog of saying of using merely the pump gauge at a gas station and your odometer to figure out when you should next get gas. No, you have a feedback mechanism. It's called a gas gauge. In the same way that I weigh myself to figure out how I'm actually doing, nobody counts calories and then doesn't get on a scale for three decades. People don't do that. So there are feedback mechanisms within that where you say, hey, maybe I need to adjust this anyway. I think there are little modifiers that we all do when we realize this is what it's supposed to take to do this task. But in actuality, we need to modify this slightly so that everything works out. In my case, I realized there was a roughly 300 calorie gap between what I thought I was ingesting and what I actually was. And once I took that into consideration, everything seemed to work out fine. This notion that calorie counting is a myth because if you take our crappy supposition and extend it 14 decades, you'll be fat. Stuff like that just annoys me because it's arguing in bad faith.
Well, it's like the next article about like how if we keep, you know, if population growth continues to grow exponentially, we'll have like 5 trillion people next year. Like,
pointless extrapolation for the win.
Yeah.
So yeah, that was a case where it was 4 a.m. Coincidentally, I was sitting in my underwear in my kitchen eating chips. So I don't know to what extent that factored into it. Like, I'm sure you ever see a calorie counting, I'm going to put it on my blog. Like, I'm trying to figure out if in the end they've won anyway. Like, take that, fatty. So yeah, that's what I've written written on recently. My anger that came out of a sleepless night and my hatred of a crappy article in a Reader's Digest as reiterated by some guy who does a Windows podcast. Way to pick your enemies, Terry.
Good job.
Well done.
Okay. For Terry Robinson, Mike Noble, and Chris Dodds, this has been the Inadequest.
Yay!
Woohoo!
I'm going to go cut myself.